Good evening, everyone. It's good to see everyone out this evening. We've got a good number with us. It's good to see you feeling better and back, Ashley. We have visitors again this evening, which we appreciate very much. And Carol's sister from Richmond is visiting with us tonight. So if you haven't met her, please be sure to say hello to her. One other thing before we get into the lesson, this sheet from Wednesday night, if you haven't turned one of those into me, please do so I can go ahead and compile the list, and we'll take a look at it and get started on some of the things, on some of the recommendations. So this evening, I want us to consider again some things about the home, God's first institution. We've looked recently at one sermon on marriage being the training ground for heaven. And we looked at how we learn to appreciate our spouse, helps us appreciate God. How we learn to give thanks to our spouse, helps us to appreciate how to give thanks to God. How we learn to forgive our spouse, helps us to learn how God forgives us from our shortcomings. We had a lesson on forgetting the Lord from Deuteronomy chapter 6, showing the importance of how we need to raise godly children. That's one of the purposes of having godly children is to raise godly children so that they can stand up and speak up in this world that's full of sin. So this evening, I want us to look at the home as the first institution that God created. The home has been under attack from the beginning, from back in the garden. And the home is the stabilizing unit of society. And God designed it to be a certain way, and He designed certain functions of the home. And we will see how man has tried to change those. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, the Lord God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him." And Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." That's what the Bible says about the beginning of the home. Where are we today? We are far from that. In this slide, you look at these people that are here. These are a couple of men, and you probably can't tell it from where you're sitting, but the one on the left has some pretty strong arms with his veins popping out. They're dressed up as different kind of characters, teaching children that they can dress up and be whatever they want to be. This group that is named on this slide up here, a couple years ago, I put up a couple slides at the beginning of class that had their mission statement. And their mission statement is to destroy the nuclear family. I tried to go and find that information online again. You can't find it online now. That doesn't mean that they've changed their mission statement. That just means it's not where you can find it unless you can go back in the archives. I tried going back through my PowerPoints to find that, and I looked and looked and looked and could not find it. And with that also, there was a list, I had a list of some of the major companies that support millions and millions of dollars to this cause that is trying to destroy the home, destroy the family. Amazon was one of them that ranked up at top, and there are a lot of entertainment companies, a lot of media companies, and we should be a little more aware of where we spend our dollars, how we spend them. I will gladly pay more for something instead of paying to a company that's going to take part of what I give to them, and they turn around and use that money to try to destroy the family. But friends, the family is under attack. Back to people trying to change the way a child thinks and see themselves. Just be who you are. That's a good statement. But let a boy be a boy and let a girl be a girl, and don't try to confuse them. This is something that someone posted. Talking sexually with adults at work is sexual harassment. And when I had employees, I would make it a point. I didn't talk sexual at all around them, but I would make it a point not to even comment on if a woman was wearing something nice to say, oh, that's a very nice outfit, something like that. I did not want to get anywhere close to talking about someone. So talking sexually with adults at work is sexual harassment. But now teachers talking sexually with children K through 3 is necessary. You see how the world is turned upside down? And again, these aren't women that are in these reading groups. These are men dressed up as women trying to get children indoctrinated from an early age to change what God created them for. One thing that is equally as bad as this, the next one is a slide of one of the new parents today, and it's an electronic device. You see parents not interacting with their children. They will give them something to do, and then they'll set them down in front of a screen. They'll turn this on. Here, watch this. And parents have turned up parenting over to some device. One other thing to mention before we get into some scriptures, your journey will be much lighter and easier if you don't carry your past with you. So that's one of the things that affects a marriage. The way we were raised, the things that we dealt with growing up, the kind of parents that we had, or didn't have. Some people may be dealing with problems of being molested or abused or any number of things. And I'm thinking of doing a lesson on this topic because we don't need to play the victim. When we get into a marriage relationship, we don't need to play the victim card. And you think about, when I think about that, the person that comes to my mind is Joseph. You cannot think of anybody that had a more dysfunctional family than Joseph. His father had 4 different wives. He was a favorite. His brothers hated him. His brothers tried to kill him. They tried all kinds of things with Joseph. But Joseph put God first. But let's get into some scriptures and look at the home as God instituted it, as he ordained it. He said it's not good that man should be alone. So when God instituted the home, this places a halo of sacredness and holiness around that relationship. And the home is the oldest institution that there is. It's before there was any government, before there was school, it was before he instituted the church. Before there was any business organization, there was the home. The home. So I want us to look at 4 different functions of the home. God instituted the home, and there are 4 functions for us to look at that are fulfilled in the home. The first one is companionship. Companionship. And when you think about the last 2 years, what's been going on? People have tried to isolate us. They've tried to divide us and isolate us, and that is just the opposite of what God created us to do and to be. God created us to be together. He created us to be together in a home. He created us to be together in the church. Again, back to the definition, ecclesia, we're called out of our house to come to some public place to be together. God created us to be together. And that is one of the major functions of a marriage, of the home. And of course, the foundation for all of this is love. Ephesians 5:22, because we want to be together with someone, and we want to be loved, we need to be loved, and we want that to be for all of our life. So companionship is a function of the home. With that, one of the components of that is affection. To be loved is a primary function of the home in the family. Affection. And it satisfies, the home satisfies the need for affection. And it's one that gives security in human relations. And it's a very important function of the family, especially with a child, to provide the child in its earliest years with unconditional affection. And you stop and think about that. That is what mirrors God in us. God loves us. Did God love us when we were good? He loved us when we were good. He loved us when we were his enemies. He loved the church when it nailed his son to the cross. He loved us unconditionally. And as a husband and wife, as a couple in a home, we need to love each other unconditionally, and we need to learn and show and demonstrate that love to our children. And when I talk about love, I'm talking about biblical love, not Hollywood love. You turn on, and I love to watch movies, and on some of them you'll see this, you see all types of different couples meet and sparks fly, and she's beautiful and he's handsome, and they go off and they build this wonderful life together, and they get in the fast, fancy car and drive and go all over the world. That's, again, what Hollywood portrays love as being. I remember one time, and it seems just like yesterday, George, when I was back in my 20s, and I was talking to my brother, and my brother gave me so much advice, and advice about a lot of things. She's nodding her head. Different girls. And he told me one time, he said, Bruce, he said, you know, when you get older, love's a little bit different. He said, love may be just sitting on the sofa holding your wife's hand. And he was in his 30s then. And his wife died when she was 37 of breast cancer. So I understood that he was telling me from his heart what love is. And she died, and a couple months later, I married Carol, and he remarried someone that he knew from years before. And it was interesting, with the age difference in us, we both got married the same year. He got married on Valentine's Day, and we got married in August. But it's Bible love. Don't confuse Hollywood love with Bible love. Bible love is true and real and deep, and it's founded on God's love. And when we think about providing affection for each other and for our children, one of the most frightening things for a child to discover is that their parents don't love each other anymore, and they divorce. And that's one of the reasons that God hates divorce. And in this country, you talk about the virus being a pandemic. Divorce is pandemic. It's all over the world, and people don't think a thing about it. And again, that's nothing new. We would go back a generation or so and say people, divorce was uncommon, and that's true. But you go back to the time of the Roman Empire, and those men would have, they didn't care how many wives they had. They would have men for partners. They would have young people. They, any and everything. So there's been perversions of the home from the beginning. But a family home is bound together by love and affection. That is one of the functions. And another component of companionship is security. And you think about, we live in a crazy world. Where are we going to find security and stability? Is it going to be when we go into the workplace tomorrow? They could care less about your security and stability. The world is very unstable and it's very competitive. But home is where we can relax and be ourselves. The home has meaning throughout life. And you stop and think about this. I have fond memories going back to my early childhood in the home. The memories that we create in our home, good or bad, are going to follow us through life. The home is where we learn a language, where we learn skills, where we learn attitudes about the Bible, about God, about the church, where we have emotional stability set for the days ahead, when stresses and strains come along. I can remember my dad telling me a lot of times when I was growing up, he'd say, "Bruce, don't take your problems to bed with you." And I never understood what he meant until I got to a certain age and I'd go to bed worrying about this and about that. And he would tell me different things as I was growing up that I think back on where he was giving me good advice. Well, another component of companionship is assurance. And that's related to security. When you have this love one to another, there is an assurance to life that you can't find anywhere else except in the home. You can find love at the workplace till the next pretty face comes along. But when it's in the home, it's going to be forever, it should be. And again, everywhere else, there's competition that takes place. And there shouldn't be competition in the home. Sometimes there is, and you can see it between a husband and wife, and that's not a healthy thing. That's not going to make a good marriage. But the home should be where there is love, this assurance, this security, where it's reciprocal. And one of the most gratifying things for a father is when his child says, "Daddy, I love you. Daddy, I love you." When your child says that to you, that's worth more than all the money in the world. That's what we want to raise our families to be, raise our children to be. Well, another function of the home is economic stability. We live in a world that takes money. It takes money to do things, and there has to be certain economic arrangements for raising a family. There has to be a distribution of labor between the man and the woman. One person can't do it all. So earning is one of the components of the economic stability. Every so often, I listen to the Dave Ramsey show when I'm in the car. There are some things in some of his language I don't care for, but one of the things I really appreciate when people call in for money advice, and he'll say, "Well, I make this much money, and she makes that much money, and she has her money, and I've got my money." And he'll stop and say, "Wait a minute, you're married, right? It's not your money, it's not her money, it's our money. It's our money." And that's another one of the problems we see in marriages today. When these young people get married, they don't become one all the way, and they still want to have, "Well, I got my money, and you got your money, and you spend it on what you want, and I'll spend it on what I want." No, it's marriage is our money, and we have to understand that. Then we start planning goals for the future. What are we going to spend our money on? How much are we going to give to the Lord? How much are we going to give to help other people with what they need? How much are we going to give for this and for that? How much are we just going to go out and blow to have some fun? It's a husband and wife decision. I'm going to do what I want to do, and you do what you want to do, and don't get in my way. But economics is a family necessity. 2 Thessalonians 3:10, for even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. And again, we see how society has turned that around today. Society rewards people for not going to work. I've heard different stories over the years how generations would deal with that. Ephesians 4:28, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the things which is good, that he may give to him that needeth. So what do? God tells us to work. We go out and work. We make money. We give to God. We provide for ourselves. And then we give to others. That's the three things we do with our money. And work is ordained of God. And it provides, again, another foundation that we build our home on and how we live our lives. And if somebody is not working, and we understand some people are not able to, if they are able to and they are not working, they're just a parasite on society. They are a drain. It goes against what the Bible teaches about work, about what God teaches. He said, 6 days thou shalt labor. How much labor are you doing if you can work and you aren't going out looking for work? 6 days you shall labor. It goes against society because we are all dependent upon the cooperation of all able-bodied persons. We live in a society where we contribute. It goes against ourselves if we don't work because that's undermining our character. It just, we feel like being lazy and I'm not going to do anything, and then we develop this a you owe me mentality, and we see a lot of people that have that. And speaking of the economic stability and the earning and spending and providing, the husband, the head of the house, should not feel like the paycheck is mine and I'll give you something if I feel like it. It's a couple thing. It's a couple thing. You gotta work on it. I've heard stories before, and I don't know of any place where this happens, but I've heard stories where the husband would go out the best of this and the best of that, and then his wife would not get any money to go out and buy the necessities. That's not right. But then spending is another component of economic stability. There's physical things that we have to live in this world, and we have to understand the value of those things, the value of food, clothing, furniture, and we see all of those things going up. That's where a budget comes in handy. A budget to help us be wise stewards of our money. And I know it's a personal thing, but if you have a budget, you're going to be so better positioned to prepare for things than if you don't. And the one thing that, like when I tried to teach my kids how to set one up, and they would show me what they've got, and I'd say, now that's good, that looks really good, but where do you have planned for the unexpected? And they would forget to put a category in there for the unexpected. You have a car, you know it's going to break down. You know it's going to need this, you need that. You have something mechanical in the house. You know the furnace is going to go out, the refrigerator is going to go out, this, that, anything else. You just put that in your budget too. And when that comes along, you know, something breaks down, well, okay, we've planned for that. And it doesn't create an uproar in a family. It's part of stability. Again, the home is a stabilizing force in society with companionship and with this economic component of it. But with the providing, so many of these things, it gets down to the nitty-gritty because it's daily considerations. You get that paycheck, you're going to be spending money every day. You're going to be buying gas, hopefully not every day, as much as it's gone up. You're going to be buying groceries every day. You got to plan. You got to be a wise steward. Should I buy groceries and make a meal, or just go through the drive-thru every time? Should I plant a garden and raise some food, or should I just call and order and have them deliver another pizza? These are decisions that people make, and it all goes back to the home, goes back to the husband, the wife, how the child grows up, how the influences from the outside are going to affect us. A third component of the home is personality growth. And a home is where, as individuals, we grow and our personality comes out. It comes out through loving each other. Carol doesn't like me using her as an example, but I said tonight, since I'm talking on the home and the marriage, I better open the door for you when I let her in the truck. Our personality comes out. Our interest. And as a family, you have interest together. When our children were young, we had a lot of social activities. They were involved in sports. They were involved in soccer. And I remember Chris's soccer coach told me one time, he said, every time it was getting close to 7 and you would get up off the bench, I hated that because I knew you were going to take Chris out of the game to go to church. But that he knew what we were doing. Our children grew up knowing that. And we were involved in each other's interest. Sports, school. I imagine some of us got together yesterday or today with our family. We need to show interest in our family. And you think, you go back to the home and raising children, and especially godly children, God gives us a child. A newborn cannot say a word. A newborn has no convictions. It's a blank slate until we start teaching that child. Are we going to teach that child godly principles? And are we going to develop a godly personality in that child? Again, you don't see that on that Hollywood movie with Mrs. Beautiful and Mr. Handsome in their fancy car. But this is part of the real home and real love as God would have it. Experiences. Experiences are a big part of personality growth. I'm sure everybody here has gone someplace with someone else where they share that experience. You and Bill have gone to places that Carol and I have not gone to. We have gone to places that you have not gone to. Those experiences build stability. They cement that relationship. Jim and Joyce, you've gone on a lot of trips to a lot of places. You have experiences unique to yourself that we do not have. Lastly, the fourth function, and it's not last in priority, it's the most important one, but it's spiritual growth. The home furnishes the best place for spiritual growth, for building faith. You think about some families, where some families, you can say, you know, when did you come into the church? Well, my parents were in the church, my grandparents, my great-grandparents. You can go back several generations. You don't have to, but again, that's one of the functions of raising godly children. So they raise godly children, to build faith. Remember Paul's words to Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:5. when I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that is in thee, which dwelt first in thy grandmother Lois and thy mother Eunice, and I am persuaded that in thee also. You know, a grandparent can have a great influence on a grandchild. I was communicating with one of my cousins recently, and on my mother's side of the family, there were 10 children. Most of my aunts and uncles have died, and there's just a couple left. And I was talking to my cousin. I said, it's so strange with our grandparents being gone, our aunts and uncles dying. It's just so different. And she said, yeah, Bruce, now we have to be the grandparents. And I don't think of myself as a grandparent like I'd think of my old grandparents. But we are the grandparents. And what are we teaching our grandchildren? What memories are we creating with them? What godly, biblical memories are we building with them? You can get your attitude by talking with people, by reading books on motivation. You can get your attitude all kinds of ways. And I think one of the ways that is the strongest way is being around someone else. And if you're around somebody that's got a stinking attitude, you're going to have a stinking attitude. But you're around somebody that's got a positive attitude, and it can't help but rub off on you. It can't. I know some people that like the expression, they're made out of rubber, and if they fall, they're just going to bounce back up. Sometimes I fall, I want to lay on the ground for a while and say, do I have to get up? That's an attitude problem. You know, God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but we need to build our faith. And where is the best place to build that? To build it in the home. Once we build that faith in the home, we don't keep it to ourselves. We express that faith. We live it. We demonstrate it. We show it. We are the light of the world. We are the salt of the earth. And you say, what good can my little light do? And I've used the illustration lots of times. You go down to the Mammoth Cave or someplace like that. You go down in there and they turn off all the lights. And then the guide will light his lighter, one little light, and that great big area lights up from one little light. We're just one little light. But we can let our light so shine that it brings honor and glory to God, and the world sees it. We don't have to be a blinding light. We just let God's light shine in us. It's living Christianity. It's how we talk to people. It's how, I'm not saying this to brag on myself, but it's an illustration. And I try, when I meet people, to be as nice to them. I want to be the nicest person that they meet for the day. Because I'm a Christian. I want to be the nicest person that they meet today. And we've been switching over the banks, the banking business, and Jim and I were there the other day and had a real nice conversation with one of the ladies, and then David went the next day, and David said that the lady there said, Bruce is the nicest person, and I'm not doing that to brag about myself, but just as a Christian, we want to get their attention so they'll listen to us when we talk to them. We've got the most important message there is. We've got something that will save them, that will pull them out of hell. And if we come across as rough or abrasive, they aren't going to give us the time of day. But we need to build our faith. We need to express our faith in our conversation, our attitude, our walk in life. We've got to take a stand. Jesus said, he that is not with me is against me. And that has special significance in the home too. Then the third component in expressing our faith is religious guidance. The home deals with life, life in its origin, life as it's unfolding, life as an expression of personality, and then life at the end of the life here on this earth. And life is, it's what we make it. It's good or bad. It's up to us. You think about all the different examples in the Bible, the virtuous woman. You think about, you can look at examples of parents in the Bible, how they raise their children. Again, it's predictable, cause and effect. You look at Lot. He did not discipline his family correctly. What did his daughters do? They got him drunk. They lay with him so that they would raise up seed from him. He was not, we see him as the type of father not to be. You look at his uncle Abraham. And Abraham, when he was going to sacrifice Isaac, Isaac could have rebelled against Abraham. He could have overpowered Abraham. He could have run off. But he was willing to be sacrificed on that altar. Why? Because of the faith that his father would have instilled in him. And when his father told his servants, "I and the lad are going yonder and we will worship and we will return," they had a bond. And Isaac trusted his dad. And are we building that bond with our family? Sometime this week, tonight, tomorrow, go to the book of Proverbs and read the first couple chapters. My son, hear the instruction of thy father and forsake not the law of thy mother. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. My son, walk thou not in the way with them, refrain thy foot from their path. My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee. My son, forget not my law and let not thine heart keep, but let thine heart keep my commandments. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be ye weary of his correction. The book of Proverbs and much of the Bible is full of instructions, parents and children, husbands and wives, how to get along. And again, these are some of the functions of the home. God created the home for a variety of reasons. And these are four that we need to consider: the companionship, the economic stability, the personality growth, the spiritual growth. And it's different than what the world thinks of as the home. But back to those slides, what do we see going on? We see organizations trying to destroy the home. And that's nothing new. But there's a push on to do that. We see these innocent children being their minds twisted and confused, and we see them being used to promote someone else's agenda. Friends, we need to pray to God to confuse these efforts that are going on out in the world, but we need to start with ourselves in our own home, with our own family, living as God would want us to live. And friend, if you aren't part of God's family, you need to be part of God's family. How do you get into God's family? You get into it the same way that I got into my family. I was born into it. I was born into it. I wear the family name. I'm a Christian. Jesus told Nicodemus, you cannot enter into the kingdom. You must be born again. Friends, if you haven't done that, if you haven't been baptized to get into Christ, the Bible teaches us we can't be saved out of Christ, and the only way we can get into Christ is to be baptized in Christ. Friends, if you need to be obedient, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.